Good morning, this is Paul Segrist for the National Park Service. Today is Friday, September 22nd, 1995. I'm in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, with Joseph Hannon. Joe Hannon was in the Coast Guard at Ellis Island beginning January 10th, 1942. He was in boot camp there for 6 to 8 weeks, and then made a return appearance at Ellis Island in 1944, before he was given a new assignment. Present also is Kevin Daly, who's running the equipment, and we are in the Florida room, as it's been called, in the back of Joe's house here. Joe, can we begin by you giving me your full name, please?
Joseph Francis Hannon.
And your date of birth, please?
February 26, 1923.
Where were you born?
Paterson, New Jersey.
And can you give me just kind of a thumbnail sketch of your family background?
Yes. Irish Catholic on both sides. My grandfathers were both mill workers. Grandmother stayed home. My father was a city employee, was a foreman of the Shade Tree Gang in Paterson, New Jersey.
The what gang?
The Shade Tree.
Can you spell that, please?
S-H-A-D-E. Shade Tree.
Tree.
Tree gang.
I may be asking you to spell things because we do transcribe these interviews.
My mother died when I was 10 years old. She didn't work. She stayed home. And I was kind of raised by a conglomeration of aunts. Although my father did remarry, my stepmother and I didn't get along too well, so I became kind of a semi-street kid. I didn't spend a lot of time at home.
Can you tell me your parents' names, please?
The parent was Frank Hannon, and my mother was Alice O'Neill. You want my stepmother, too?
Sure.
Lillian Hersinger,
H-E-R-S-I-N-G-E-R. And were there any other brothers and sisters?
No, only child.
Only child. And you grew up in Paterson?
Till I joined the service, which was... until I was 17, going on 18, I guess, yeah.
And that's 1942?
In 1940, yes, right.
Can you tell me how you got involved with the service?
Yes, I was a...
Can you spell...
An usher in the Fabian Theater in Paterson.
Can you spell Fabian?
F-A-B-I-A-N.
Thank you.
I think. And I was there when Pearl Harbor was bombed. You know, we were called to the rear of the... of the theater, and the manager said, they would just bomb Pearl Harbor. Where's Pearl Harbor? We didn't know. And we had to go through the audience and tell all the servicemen to return to their units immediately. I was going with my girlfriend, my present wife at that time, and she said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm not going to do anything, you know." A lot of people, of course, the draft was in effect, and I was still in high school. But somehow, I don't remember what the circumstances, I decided that I was going to enlist. And I used to go fishing out of Jersey City with my father on one of the big party boats, the Palace, I think it was called. And I always saw the Coast Guard, the big white Coast Guard boats moving in and out. I thought, well, that's a good service again. They had openings there. So I went and joined the Coast Guard. My father had to give me permission, but I have no recollection of going over to New York except for my physical and for my final day, but I must have gone over and enlisted or something. And then I went to sea almost immediately because I was sworn into service at the barge office, which is down around the present lower Manhattan. And I guess the building is still there. And went to sea immediately because they marched us across to a small boat, I think it was called an 83-footer. And we were filed aboard that and taken over and deposited in Ellis Island.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process of enlisting? I mean, what that actually entails, what you went through?
Well, I went down, and it was really only a physical. I guess they gave me a written test, too. I don't remember it at all. The physical was, you know, filing through nude and getting examined. In fact, they really had a discussion because I weighed about 115 pounds.
115.
15, and I weighed, and I was same height as I am now, 5'7". So they was afraid. They were afraid that I would suffered from malnutrition, and it was a little debate amongst them whether they should take me or not. But they were taking lots of people, probably in worse shape than I, and they passed me. And then I went home, and they sent me a letter. I can remember the wording. It said, dress properly in order to make a good appearance upon your first day in service. Words to that effect. So I put on my fingertip reversible coat and my square toe shoes. They were the style in those days, rubber soles. And I reported that way.
Can you describe what a fingertip jacket is?
It's called the fingertip because it hung down as far, I guess. I really don't know. Yeah, actually, it was a reversible raincoat, winter coat. And of course, clean underwear. Good thing I did because I was in those clothing for 13 days before I was issued a uniform.
At Ellis Island?
On Ellis
Why
Island.
Why was that?
They didn't have supplies. I hope I washed the underwear, although I don't remember that I did.
How did your father feel about your decision to
enlist? I think he was kind of pleased. I really do. He and I got along all right, but we weren't by any means close. And I was a very poor high school student. I was thrown out one time. Well, I dropped out, really. He wanted to take me out. And I think he was kind of relieved that I was doing something like that. And he told me I should get some kind of training. So I came out, I would have a job.
Did he have any military experience
no, he did
in
not,
his background?
No. I guess his age for World War I was a little off. I mean, I have his draft card, so I know he was eligible, but he wasn't taken.
Yeah. Well, when you were brought to Ellis Island, I mean, did you know what that was?
Mm-mm.
Or even where they were taking you, for that matter?
Nope. I had no idea where I was going or what I was expected to do. And I didn't for a couple of days after on the island either.
Does anything stick out in your mind about the ride from Battery Park to Ellis Island that very first day?
I can remember it, but I can't really say that it was... since I had gone in and out of that area many times, I saw the things that I always saw, you know, the sugar... was a sugar factory? You know, the big sign. Colgate was there and that kind of thing. And so I was familiar generally with that. But no, I didn't remember anything particular about it.
Can you describe the boat that brought you to Ellis Island?
Yeah,
that
it's
first
what
day?
The Coast Guard called an 83-foot. It was 83 foot long, very narrow. It's a patrol boat, almost a harbor patrol boat, And it really wasn't designed to carry groups of enlistees. So we were just kind of crowded aboard, my recollection.
How large was the group that was going out there?
I have no idea.
But there were more than...
Oh, yeah, there must have been... Well, I would say that the least there would be 50, but I really don't know.
What's the first thing that happened once the boat docked at Ellis Island?
There's something I want to put in before that, too, because I think it was interesting. We were standing out in front of the barge office, this was inside the barge office, and the officer, I guess it was an officer, it could have been a chief, I don't know, who administered the oath of our enlistment oath, said, now is anybody changing their mind? If you are, step forward now. You know, and it crossed my mind. I said, gee, this is the only time. I have no idea going to war. I don't really know what that meant. But I said, this is the only time I'm going to have a chance. I glanced over at my father, and he didn't say, yeah, step out. So I continued with the oath. And then they brought us outside, and then we said, if we want to put the number at 50 marchers who had never marched, before, I'm sure we weren't much marchers. And then we got down to the boat and got aboard. A recollection on the other end is clear to me, is because the ferry boat that is there now that was in, and I watched that. We pulled up on the starboard side of the harbor. And we unload it right in front of the immigration building.
Then what happened? What was the process once
specifically?
You
I really can't say. I know that there were in my memory there's a tremendous number of lines of people waiting to get shots, waiting to get food, waiting to get supplies, and so on. I was brought up in a very modest Irish Catholic house. I was a little uneasy with the nudeness, you know, that went around there, and also I remember I guess I must have trouble going to the bathroom because it was always somebody when I had to defecate. There was always a line, so I looked in one of the other toilets there and it had a red cross on it. So I said, and nobody was in there, so I said, I'll use that. Because I thought that was for pharmacist mates, but it wasn't. It was for venereal disease patients. I didn't know that, though, after I used it a couple of times, though.
Can you describe for me the facilities where you slept on the island?
Yes, it was... are you familiar with the island at all? I mean, have you been through in it?
My office is there.
No, I'm talking about where we were.
Oh, yes. So yeah, but explain it for someone who doesn't know.
Right, okay. Yeah. But I'm asking you because I want to know. We were in what was called the drill shed. I think it was called the drill shed. It's the room with the great big compass painted on the wall. It was still there when I was there a few years ago. And the bunks, of course, we're not drilling in there. The bunks had to be at least three high. My brain says that was higher than that, but I kind of doubt that it was. So we were in bunks three high and maybe four, who knows, for all of the time I was there.
How many people in the room?
Oh, God, I don't know. Hundreds and hundreds, I guess. When you figure that whole room was full of these stacked bunks. So,
was that the only room where people slept?
I don't know. It's the only one that I saw, anyhow.
And how many bathrooms were attached to that?
No recollection of that at all. There was another big room that was the mess hall, and I think the bathrooms were off the mess hall. But the physical characteristics, the layout of it, is kind of vague to me.
You mentioned the compass painting on the wall. Can you describe that a little bit for us on tape?
Well, I suppose it was for to teach you how to box a compass, how to use a compass. But it wasn't used for that while we were there. If we had any training, and we did have some, they were done in small rooms and small groups scattered around the building. So that room was never used for instruction, to my knowledge, nor was it used for drill. If we did our drill, we went out in the yard, or most of the drilling that we did was over in front of the immigration building.
And can you describe what drilling entailed?
Well, they taught us the manual of arms, you know, how to carry a rifle and parts of the rifle. We never fired one. The left turn, right turn, about face, that kind of thing.
Were the rifles functioning rifles or were they dummy
rifles?
Yes,
they were.
Or?
We knew they were functioning rifles because part of the assignment that we had there was to guard the seawall. To walk the seawall, carrying a rifle and an ammunition belt, web belt, and they gave us one clip of ammunition, which we carried in the belt. We were forbidden to put it in the rifle. They were Springfield, I don't know what the, what threes, was. That's, I think they're from 1903, I'm not sure. But we were instructed never to put the clip of ammunition in. And none of us knew how to, I don't think unless we experimented, none of us knew how to put the ammunition anyhow, and of course certainly not how to fire it. There was a range on the island, but I never remember using it.
So rifle use was never part of your instruction there?
It was, yeah. Oh yeah, we had regular classes in it. But they were classes, they weren't practical.
All in theory, not in practice.
And of course we were, you know, there to prevent saboteurs from coming aboard the island, and from prisoners, aliens, whom we also guarded, escaping. I never had any occasion to stop anyone, although we were told that when the relief came, you know, we had to challenge them in a true military fashion. You know, halt who goes there, and we probably had passwords too. but I don't remember it as a big problem.
Can you talk a little bit about the guarding of the aliens and what sticks out in your mind about that experience?
That is the thing that most sticks in my mind. We were taken down to one of the guard positions. That was an outside. One I just described was outside, where you could see other people around you. But then inside the building, probably in the basement of the immigration building, they had these two giant rooms set up. By giant, I mean they looked awfully big to me. And they, one side were females, the other side were males. And of course, I didn't know what this was all about. You know, enemy alien didn't mean anything to me. And I don't think anyone ever explained it. We didn't carry guns when we were down there. We carried clubs. And we were told that we had to make sure there was order was kept and that there's no intermingling on the two sides, because these were families broken up, you know, the females and the males. And I remember the overriding thing that I could smell was oranges. It's interesting. I guess they were given oranges for prevent scurvy or something. I'm sure they were fed all right. But that was the odor. It wasn't. You would think maybe an odor of human sweat or things like that. But and there may have been. But the thing that stuck with me was the orange smell, and I was fascinated by it because, first of all, why were they there, kind of thing? Because they were Americans, most of them. You know, I delighted in looking at some of the teenage girls because they were my age, or just about, and they're all in the bobby socks, you know, and their Angora sweaters and everything like that, and talking English, although we were not supposed to talk to them, but you could hear them. So it was a very mysterious kind of a thing.
That was one of your instructions, that you were not to speak to these...
I suppose it was. I don't remember anyone specifically saying it, but somehow we didn't.
Do you remember an occasion where you did speak to one of these people?
No, I never remember doing that.
Do you recall... you mentioned you thought they were Americans. Do you recall any other nationalities being held at Ellis Island at
that
time?
The Germans, they seemed to be, at least in my mind, after I found out why they were there, were mostly German, and I think a lot of them were. I must have either overheard or talked, because I know, this could have been at home. Some of our neighbors, I think it was a German baker, had been picked up, you know, and I didn't see him or anything like that. I didn't know. Our baker was Scotch, so he wasn't one of the enemy aliens, but I never remember seeing any Japanese. Italians, yes, there was a lot of Italians and Germans. That's about all, I suppose.
Would guarding the enemy aliens be a daily thing for you? Was that part of the routine, or was that a special?
It was a daily thing, but not necessarily for me, because we would rotate different. You know, you'd have your training sessions and your classroom sessions and your guard duty, and that would be at night, by the way. I guess we did during the day too. And sometime your guard duty would take you to other places in a building too, where you might be a messenger. But one of the spots, which I've been back to the island and searched for, I can't find it. And it's so clear in my mind that I can't believe that it's not in existence. One of the spots was in front of a big vault. I mean, a walk-in vault. Much bigger than this room. And, you know, that was, but what was in that was the valuables of the people who were interned. But when I went back to Ellis Island four or five years ago with Brian, we couldn't find it.
I should say, for the sake of the tape, that the Brian that you're referring to is Brian Feeney.
Right.
Can you describe for me, you've done a little bit of it already, the daily routine, starting with the time you got up and what you did and go on through the day?
No, I really can't specifically say that. I know that we were around 5 o'clock in the morning.
And how were you woken up?
Probably a bosun's whistle. The bosuns would walk through blowing their whistles. I don't remember a bugle call, but there could have been that. Someone else may remember something different. And then you would get up and you would have your breakfast and the bathroom facilities, and then you would go to whatever you're going to do that day. And they would have post it, orders of the day, post it, what uniform, what the uniform would be, when you got a uniform.
When you have one.
As I said.
Where did you go for breakfast?
It was a mess hall, right there, there.
Where in relation to where you actually slept? I mean, did you have to walk?
I remember remember it being that way, pointing left, but I'm not really sure that that's where it was.
Can you describe for me what they would feed you for breakfast?
I imagine the usual thing, French toast, shit on a shingle, as I said. It's a cereal, I imagine. But that's really, I'm reconstructing that. I really don't, I have no specifics, you know. I don't remember ever being hungry, except a young man, normal hunger of a young man who didn't snack all day, you know. And they didn't keep us tremendously busy, because I don't think they had room to keep us busy. You know, there just was so many people, and, you know, they were struggling to get this thing organized. I mean, nobody expected it to happen. And it was so new, the war was so new. I mean, after all, you're talking only little over a month after Pearl Harbor, you know. So, and no uniforms for a long time, for me anyhow, I guess for others too.
What was the general age category of the men who were brought out at your time?
I would say that was the general age here. My
late
age,
teens.
I'm saying early 20s, late teens. Although occasionally, my best friend in service I met, it was my next assignment. So I guess you want to discuss that. It didn't originate on Ellis Island. But he was a man in his, I think he was 33. Which is quite, and just accidentally, we stayed together for the next 2 years after that. And he was kind of popped to the group because he was so much older than the rest of us.
Yeah. You've mentioned guard duty on the seawall and guarding the aliens. What were some of the other things that you went through during the boot camp experience at Ellis Island?
Well, one of the things that really sticks in my mind. Right then, about the time I was there, was the late winter or spring. They had a parade in New York called the New York at War Parade, and all of the military units in the whole area were going to march in this parade because it was the last 16 hours, which I think it did. I think it was 16 hours.
The parade itself was to last 16 hours.
Yeah, yeah. So. Now we were non-marchers, and we were taken out to the parade, the seawall really, and we were put through the paces as far as marching and turning properly and so on, but we still didn't become marchers. And at that time too, I saw Jack Dempsey for the first time, because he was in charge of physical training for the Coast Guard, heavyweight champion of the world at one time. And he came out, and I saw him. I didn't see him, speak to him or anything. But he came ashore for a few minutes, and I don't know, talked to the officers or something, and went back in again, back to New York again. But we then were taken. We were taken by truck then into New York City. Now the parade would start uptown, probably. Fifth Avenue.
You're taken by truck from Ellis Island?
We cross Ellis by the ferry, I'm sure, and then got on trucks at the South Street Seaport kind of area, that area. And then we're taken uptown to where the parade started. I don't know, 60th, maybe, somewhere up there.
60th Street.
Yeah. And then we were marched down, and that was the funny part, because there were a couple of guys in the group. There were two professional boxers, Cohen and Friedman, I think the two names were. Al Cohen, and I forget Friedman, what his first name was. But they were really tough guys, you know. They I guess somebody told them to get into the Coast Guard so they wouldn't have to go fight, which I don't think they did. I think they stayed on Ellis Island the whole time there. Both New York guys, Brooklyn guys, you know. But they weren't very much for marching. And we were marching down Fifth Avenue. And somebody in the rear of me said, Al got, you know, screwed up, and I think his rifle fell off his shoulder. And somebody in the background, get in fucking step, you fucking Jew bastard. He stopped right there, right in the middle of the parade. Who said that? And he was ready for a fight right there. But I got to know them a little bit later. They were both really nice guys. You know, I enjoyed them. They were characters. I tried looking them up. I did find one of them, but I mean, as far as their records, because I'm sure they're in the ring record book. Yeah. Friedman was called the man who built the Brooklyn Arena. He always called himself.
The Brooklyn Arena.
Arena. I don't know what that is.
You know, talking about this makes me think that were there athletic activities going on with the Coast Guard at Ellis Island that were for recreation?
Well, if you look at the records of the island, and I have some of these here, they had a tremendous, when it became a receiving station, they had a tremendous athletic program. In fact, they were the champions of the area in a couple of sports. Baseball, I think, was one of them. And a lot of big-name athletes came through there. And usually they didn't. Victor Mature was the only other big name that I remember. I never saw him, but he refused to do things like that. He wanted to be an enlisted man, and he stayed an enlisted man the whole time he was in service. But others, I think, had, if they were good athletes, they were held there. Because it was a very lot of our recreation, but not while I was there.
So in your time there, there was nothing
not
like that.
Not that I remember.
Because you're talking about the boxers being there and
yeah, but
and
I just happened to
that.
Run into them. Uh-huh. You know, they weren't, I don't know what they were doing. They were the same as I was going through boot camp, I suppose.
What other things were you taught in boot camp to do?
Well, we were taught knots. Learn to tie knots like a sailor. And nomenclature.
Can you explain for me how they taught you to do the knots? I mean, what were the circumstances?
I don't remember where it was, but I'm sure it's just like Boy Scouts. You know, this is a knot that's used to shorten the rope, and this is how you tie it. And now we'll all practice that kind of thing. I'm sure that's how it was done. And where in the building? I don't know that. But also, we had classes in seamanship. You know, what to do aboard a ship. You know, when you go aboard a ship, you always have to salute the colors and then the officer of the deck who will be there. And so that we knew a lot of this stuff, but we never had a chance to use it. The only kind of thing that maybe it's a combination of recreation and training. One of the things they did, they had lifeboats on the island, on davits, so that they could be lowered into the water. So a couple of times we were given lifeboat drill. And we were put down into the lifeboats and climbed down into the lifeboats and then taught, how to pull an oar or how to act when the coxswain said toss oars, you know, that meant hold the oar up in front of you, and in oars, I guess, was the other one. And, but then we would row out to Statue of Liberty and go around that island and then come back in again. And that's the only actual sea training that I had. But another thing that I remember, I guess everybody kind of liked this because it was a chance to grab a nap. They showed us slides of the various silhouettes of airplanes. You know, this is a Zero, and this is a whatever bomber they were using, the Japanese and the German planes. And we had to identify them just by the silhouette. That's because every sailor, no matter what he was going to be eventually, was trained to be a deckhand and an observer. So I never had any occasion to use that, but I dozed off many a time in that class. You know,
that's interesting. I've not heard that before from any of the Coast Guardsmen. What did they offer you any kind of recreation while you were there?
I have no recollection.
Movies or, I mean, anything like that?
They may have. I don't remember anything.
Not that you remember. Mm-hmm. Did you have an occasion, you rode around the Statue of Liberty, did you have any other occasion to go over to Bedloe's Island, to the Statue of Liberty in your time?
We didn't land there. We just went around.
Right.
There may have maybe some of the other coxswains would take you on, but we didn't. Mostly I spent my time, my free time, brooding. Because, you know, when you go out to the rear of the building, you're only about a couple hundred yards from New Jersey. But I couldn't get there, you know. And so I was homesick as hell, as all of us were, I'm sure. And you just go out there and kind of brood. I think that's probably a good military procedure that all sailors and soldiers do. Yeah.
Maybe you could explain for us exactly the process of getting liberty and how often you were allowed that. And
well, we weren't allowed any liberty during boot camp. I don't know when it was that I had. I know I tried to get liberty because my class was graduating from high school. And at that time, they graduated in the middle of the year. It was a big, great big high school in Patterson, East Side. And graduation, you know, was in there somewhere, and I was supposed to graduate. As an aside, I wasn't a good student, as I said. And I had been slated to graduate before, but I never did. But then when I went in service, the vice principal told me that since there's war, there's been a war thing on the law on the books from World War I, anyone going into service with so many credits is automatically graduated with their class. So I asked for leave to go home so I could participate, because I could envision myself going up the aisle in my uniform, you know, but they wouldn't give it to me. The only time we thought we were going to get off the island was they got us up one night and said that we were prepared to go on ashore to help fight a fire, which I later found was the Normandy burning. We were alerted, but never went ashore. But then eventually, I got liberty, and I think it was probably every other night. Usually when you're shore, attached to shore duty, it's every other night. And I know that I got it because what you had to do before you were finally finished enough of training, you had to be able to recite the Articles. Not the Articles of War? No. What's the other thing I'm talking about? The duties of a sentry. I guess that's what it was. And you had to be able to recite those to an officer without referring to any notes. And everybody studied like crazy, and I remember studying like crazy, and I got liberty and went home. But then I was back the next day.
So would that be towards the end of your time?
Yeah, I would think that would maybe after about a month. Because I remember many times sitting in waiting for the ferry in the ferry house over in Manhattan, waiting to come back out, you know.
Was that a problem when you were on Liberty, the boat schedules?
No, they ran very often. I don't remember anything. I think that those of us who are nervous always worried about it, you know, because if you get late, you're really in trouble, they said. But I don't think so. They were very frequent, and unless there was fog or something like that, there was no reason for them not to be. Yeah.
Did you or any of your colleagues ever get punished for some reason for something that was done that sticks out in your mind?
No. I did have a captain's mast, which is a punishment mast. Well, actually, it's a captain's request place, and they use it for punishment. That was in Puerto Rico, though. I wasn't I was on the island, no.
And nothing that you remember?
No, no other person that I know of.
Was there a place at Ellis Island that you remember that was used for punishing Coast Guardsmen?
Yeah, the brig was down in the basement. I saw that. That was still there when I visited the island. It was, you know, a barred room. And you heard talk of people See, what the island was at that time was kind of a peculiar combination of things because of the health services. You know, the public health hospital was there. So there would be a lot of guys in the public health hospital who probably were quarantined or weren't allowed liberty, but they would get off somehow, you know. And so there was always talk about the brig, you know, that somebody ended up at a brig. But almost scuttlebutt. That's the word that was used that you learn after you take seamanship. It's not a rumor, it's a scuttlebutt. So, no, I have no direct knowledge of anyone.
Did you have any opportunity to go to the Public Health Service Hospital or any of your colleagues?
The only time I went over there wasn't for sickness. I guess I was on messenger duty, and somebody needed to see the captain, the commanding officer. And they told me where he was. He was playing poker over on the other side, near the public health hospital. I'm not sure, that may be where his quarters were, but I went to his quarters and left and gave him a message that he was wanted someplace. And so.
Tell me about the officers that stick out in your mind at that time and why they stick out in your mind.
Well, actually, the officers really don't stick out in my mind because we didn't have much contact with officers. We had contact with enlisted men. There was one guy that everyone hated, Red Miller, I think his name was. He was the bosun in charge. And just since I've been going out to these reunions and talking to other people, you know, oh yeah, his father owned the store up in Manhattan, and he had influence, and he was there the whole war, you know. But he was a mean son of a gun, and he was always screaming and you know, supposedly punishing people. I don't remember him, but we were afraid of him. We really were. He's the only one that stands out in my mind. He was such a threatening figure all the time, because they're always screaming. You know, it's true of any service. You know, they're always screaming at you for something, and a lot of times you don't know what they're screaming at you for. So,
was there an inspection process that you had to undergo?
Yeah, you had to lay out your sea bag, and
what is a sea bag? Can you describe?
Sea bag is a long like a hollow tube. Close that one end with a drawstring at the top, in which you packed everything that you owned. So when you picked, usually you had a mattress to wrap around it too. So when you picked that mattress and sea bag up, you were ready to go.
Must have been a thin mattress.
Yeah, it was pretty thin. Although not uncomfortable, I don't remember as being unable to sleep or anything like that. But in the sea bag would be all of your winter uniforms when you got them, all of your summer uniforms, and they all had to be rolled in a certain way and stopped. They had a little thin stop cord, it was called, in which you rolled them up and then tied the two ends and with a square knot. It had to be a square knot. And so then you would have to take all that stuff out of the sea bag and lay it out so that the inspecting person, probably an officer, would be able to tell at a glance whether anything was missing in there. You know, I still have the sea bag downstairs. And the uniforms, by the way.
Who would do the inspection?
I don't know. Probably, I guess it would depend upon on their assignment. On board ship would probably be the executive officer. He was kind of the guy that ran the ship, you know. But then sometimes it'd be a captain's inspection too. That would be the same thing, you know. Captain would come and inspect the ship, and I mean for cleanliness, and also some inspect some of the guys too. But I don't really remember. I wish I'd taken notes about that.
You mentioned earlier that the bosun was in charge of waking everybody up. Can you talk a little bit about the bosun's role in this society?
The bosun is the man who's in charge of the deck forces. He's in charge of everyone, really, but basically he's the one that supervises the deck force. And usually they were guys with long service, excellent sailors. They really knew their business. But when on Ellis Island, see, they weren't, because they were just guys that they got in the Coast Guard, and for whatever reason, influence or just because they have a mean streak, they were put in charge. Some people can be put in charge of things. And the island was kind of a confusion of things. You have these old salts who had been to sea for 20 years, and you had these other people. They were not officers or even petty officers. I mean, they weren't two kinds of petty officers. You know, this up the first class, they would wear a sailor suit and commissioned, but they were not commissioned, but they wore the peak cap and the suit coat kind of thing. So.
Well, so what were some of the other duties of the bosun in a boot camp situation, other than waking you up?
Well, I have to go back a little bit about this. See, the bosun on board a ship, I have to refer to what his normal job would be. He would be in charge of, say, the deckhand. You want to refuel at sea. The destroyer comes alongside to refuel at sea. The bosun, usually the chief bosun, would be in charge of rigging it. He'd do all the rigging, you know, and telling it to how it's done, give the orders on the winches, things like that. But there's another person aboard a ship, which is called the master at arms, and his job is discipline. Get up in the morning, just administer punishment. So I don't know whether this guy, Red Miller, if that was his name, was a master at arms, which would be probably a bosun's mate, so-called right arm weight rate. You know, if you wore your insignia on your right arm, you were deck force. Your left arm, you were black gang. So he was acting the part of a master at arms, which was a disciplinarian. Aboard ship, you know, they'd come find you in your sack in the morning after everyone is supposed to be roused out. They would administer punishment, you know, to put you on report for it, so on. I don't really know. Things were so confusing there. I don't really know. I think his rate was coxswain, which is a one stripe right arm rate. And I think that was his rate when I knew him. But whether he was an actual bosun's mate, I don't know.
So at Ellis Island, these traditional roles all got kind of blurred.
At least to my mind.
Yeah.
maybe other people would be a little more sophisticated. As far as sailors went, they weren't so blurred, but to me they were.
Were there parts of the island that you were specifically instructed not to go to?
Well, we weren't allowed over to the public health service at all. And anything that's called officer's country, you're not supposed to go to. And I usually would have a guard, but I don't remember where that was on the island. I guess all the places where we could go, we were allowed on the drill field, the outdoor drill field.
Do you remember where that was in relationship to maybe the
immigration
building?
Well, it faced New Jersey. That was it. It was kind of like if you're looking at towards New York City, and the immigration building is on your right, so behind the other buildings was the field. And I don't remember. I walked up there with Brian and went down to the end, because part of that was given over to the aliens for their exercise area, and then the part closer to New Jersey was our area. And I suppose we did some drilling there too. No.
How was the area that was used for aliens to come outside, how was that delineated from the rest of the space?
Just a wire fence outside.
Do you remember how tall that was?
Oh, I guess it must have been 7-8 foot tall.
Did you ever have any duties outside guarding the aliens?
No. Seawall watch. There were no aliens out there. Seawall watch could be any place on the island, so that's why we'd have to go down through the public health and around, because the seawall was right there. I was thinking that I have to be careful of don't let your imagination. Boy, it's raining like hell. I remember this could be a story I heard, maybe not actually. So somebody sneaking back aboard after being absent without leave, you know, into the hospital. I wouldn't swear that I actually saw that, but it was in my mind that I did, but I'm not sure.
You mentioned earlier Victor Mature, who of course was a big Hollywood film star at that time. Were there any other well-known people either who were detained or who were in the
Yes.
Coast Guard at that time that you remember?
No, I don't remember them, but I know I read about them. And I think he was there while I was there. But I can't bet on it because I don't know the dates. I could just check it. Enzio Penza, the opera singer, was there. And reading his autobiography lately, I mean, after maybe about 10 years ago, was the first time I read it, he describes what they had to do on Ellis Island while they were aliens. So I'm not sure that he was there when I was there. It's a possibility that he was, but I never saw him.
Kevin, has anything come to you? Any questions that you'd like to ask?
What was playing in the theater when Pearl Harbor occurred that day? Do you remember?
No, I don't. That's a good question. That's a beautiful question.
It probably that's a good question.
No, because my buddy and I were Center Isle. We were, in fact, I later became, at that time, I was captain of ushers. But when I was working the center aisle, after we saw a show five or six times, then we could do the musical numbers, and sometimes we would, you know. But I don't know that. That's interesting.
Tell me a little bit about the second and last time you were at Ellis Island when it was a receiving station.
Well,
if you can give me like a quick sum up of what happened in between 1942 and 44 when you went back to Ellis.
Well, I have to preface it a little bit if you have time to do that with
Sure. 15 minutes. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, because when I came back, I was sent to Puerto Rico. There were no electricians made in the entire 10th Naval District, which was then Puerto Rico's the 10th.
And is that what you were? That was your
Well,
rank.
I went. What they did was, see, I can fill you in between. I didn't go to electrician school on Ellis Island. From Ellis Island, I went to what they call the boarding detail, in which we lived in boarding houses. If there were any place we could find a room on Staten Island, we would report to Staten Island headquarters down at the ferry in the morning. Then we'd be given assignments to board a vessel coming into the harbor, either from the Atlantic or up at the other end, coming from Long Island Sound. And then we would be put aboard that with the pilot, with a 45, which we didn't know how to, at least I didn't know how to fire, and we would board that and then stay on that until we were relieved. Anti-saboteur kind of things. So we had our gathering place at Staten Island, and somebody in there came in one day and said, who'd like to go to electrician school? And I remember my father saying, get a trade. I said, I do. He said, okay, come on. And so that's how I got into it. And the guy that I had met, or the older guy, he was already he was a subway electrician, very knowledgeable guy. So he put his hand up. So we came together, and they said, okay, get your seat bags. Well, my seat bag was in a pile probably as big as this house of seat bags, because you just took out the things you needed to live in Staten Island. And and we had to search through that pile of seat bags to find out where our seat bag was. And then we went to, people don't believe this, we went to a Siemens Church Institute, which was down near the Battery. And from there, we went to school, which was on a ferry boat tied up under the Washington Bridge. So we would march every morning from Siemens Church Institute to school at Washington Bridge, where we were taught by a man who was an expert electrician on housing electricity. He didn't know too much about marine electricity. So we came out of there, and we went to Puerto Rico. We were sent down to Puerto Rico. I forget that I interrupted myself on something. I had another thought on that. Oh, then after 18 months in Puerto Rico, I came back, and I went to, it wasn't the barge office, but somewhere around there, that's a Coast Guard district office, I guess. And I went in, and there was an officer on duty. It was on Saturday or Sunday. Oh, I came back and got married, by the way. I had 10 days leave, I got married. So the officer on duty was in an office, and then in front was a yeoman. And he said, oh, where are you coming from? And I said, Puerto Rico. He said, how much leave do you have? I said, well, I had 10 days. He says, 10 days, that's all you had? I said, yeah. And then I heard him say to the officer, sir, this guy just came back from the South Pacific and only got 10 days leave. So the officer said, give him another 10 days. So they sent me another 10 days. And then when I reported back, I went to Ellis Island like one day. And then they sent me to Manhattan Beach. And there my assignment was the USS General Gordon. And we went to Manhattan Beach. And from there, went to Bayonne. That's where the ship was fitting.
Can you talk just briefly about Ellis Island's purpose this time? I mean, what had it become?
And that's what it did. People coming through for other assignments.
Coast Guardsmen still.
Yeah, right. Still would be kind of processed through Ellis Island. In other words, they had to have a place to sleep and eat and be on a roster somewhere. So that's where they'd wait until they were assigned to whatever, school, like I was sent to school. By the way, there's lists. I have them, in fact, if you want them. Maybe you gave them to me. I don't know. I have lists of the schools with all my name on it, and all the schools that they would go to: signalman school, damage control school, electrician school, radioman school, all over country, you know, mostly the East Coast. And that's what its process was. It was kind of just like feeding them. And then they had a permanent company there whose job was to run the island and to do all the paperwork. And they're the ones that had the job of the beauty of living in a, you know, right around New York with recreation, plenty.
Does anything stick out in your mind about that one day that you spent there?
Nothing really. I can remember thinking that damn ferry boat again, you know, and being on the island, that whole depressed feeling that I had when the first time I was there came over me again. And then when I got to Manhattan Beach, it didn't help much because everyone was on their way through. Nobody was. And I was put in charge of cleaning a floor, running a waxer. Here I am, an electrician, second class, and I'm running a waxer. But I didn't stay there long because what happened was the plug came out of the wall, and I went over and pushed the plug in, and the waxer, I didn't have the switch off, started spinning around, and the handle drove through the commanding officer's door. So I left after that. I don't know whether they were looking for me or what. But then I went from there. I went to Bayonne.
And then how long did you stay in the Coast Guard?
I was in four years and I guess about 40 days after that. I can't remember my exact date. It was in February, though, just before my birthday. So,
you look back on your experience in the Coast Guard and especially Ellis Island, because that's sort of the beginning of it all, I mm-hmm. guess. How do you think that experience has influenced the rest of your life?
I think being in the Coast Guard was the best thing that ever happened to me, except marrying my wife. It was it gave me a real purpose, at least for those 4 years. You know, I knew where I was going, and I've always appreciated it. And then, of course, you know, the GI Bill of Rights that led to 2 degrees and a whole career, you know, that was gravy. But I remember seeing that posted for the first time about the GI Bill of Rights. I said, Jesus, I always wanted to go to college, but I never studied. You know, this is another chance I'm going to get, and I took it.
And talk a little bit about going to Coast Guard reunions now and what that feels like.
That's interesting because, you know, for years and years I've been saying, I remember we were on a, I think it was the first convoy that came out of New York City and went directly into Europe, Northern Europe, and we landed at Cherbourg. We didn't land at Cherbourg. I didn't find out till I went to the reunion. It was Le Havre. But then I sent for the log of the ship, so I know where the ship was every day that I was assigned to her, which was practically her whole life because I was a plank owner, and I left there only about 3 weeks before the Army transport took her over. So, but I say it was really a great thing for me to experience to have. You know, even with all the fears of we're under attack in the English Channel and you're looking. I'm in the engine room. That's my assignment. I'm looking at the escape hatch. How far is the escape hatch? If a torpedo comes through and troop transports, you know that's what they were looking for. But I never had any real fear. I never felt that I was going to die or even get injured. I don't know. It was a really, really great thing. In fact, I think I would have stayed in under different circumstances.
We should say, for the sake of the tape, the name of your wife.
Marge. Her name is Marge is what we call her. Her name is Margaret Condon Hannon.
Can you spell that, please?
C-O-N-D-O-N.
And when did you marry?
April 13th, 1944. 45? Let's see. Yeah. 44, yeah. Celebrate our 50th anniversary last year.
And children?
5.
Can you name them, please?
Yes. Joseph is the older, just turned 50. Then Kathleen, she's next. And then Frank. And then Matthew. And then our baby is Eileen. And I have 7 grandchildren, too. We have 7 grandchildren.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you very much. We've been trying to do this for some time now, and we finally got around to doing it. This is Paul Segrist signing off with Joe Hannon today on Friday, September 22nd, 1995, with Kevin Daly in attendance here in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Thank you.
Okay.